Hey, everybody. Scott Gregory here, producer of the Museum Confidential podcast, sitting in today for Jeff Martin. And Philbrook Museum of Art here in Tulsa recently opened a new exhibition called Wallflowers. It's the first ever career retrospective of the celebrated Tulsa-based artist Patrick Gordon, or P.S. Gordon, born 1953, Claremore, Oklahoma. Gordon's relationship to Philbrook Museum dates back to the 1970s when he was a teaching artist at the museum, and Wallflowers features more than 50 works, everything from still life scenes and large florals to an entire room devoted to the Gordon portrait series known as Men in Ball Gowns. Philbrook recently hosted an in-gallery chat with Pat Gordon in partnership with the Tulsa Artists Fellowship and the Center for Queer Prairie Studies, moderated by the center's executive director, Carl Jones. Wallflowers is on view through January 3rd of next year from Philbrook Museum of Art and Public Radio Tulsa. This is Museum Confidential.
One of my introductions to Pat's work was growing up in Tulsa and oftentimes seeing the Mayfest posters. So if anybody is familiar with Mayfest, which was this arts festival, it used to be in Bartlett Square, which was this great pedestrian walkway on Main Street between three or four streets downtown, and it had this sort of leveled fountain situation. And then also you would see Pat's work obviously represented there. You would see Pat's work in galleries. My parents often took me to shows. There were outdoorsy folk. We spent a lot of time in Gore, Oklahoma on Lake Ten Keller fishing, but we also would go to Dallas when there'd be like the Impressionist show or capturing important shows at Philbrook and Gilcrease. And so I grew up around Pat's work. When I came back to Tulsa for the Artist Fellowship, I became very interested in Bruce Goff, who many of you know as a 20th century American architect who started his career in Tulsa when he was just 12 years old. And I became fascinated with Goff's personal story, the fact that his career was interrupted so many times during the 20th century because of his sexuality, because of the type of work that he made. And so we started an architecture festival and other storytelling projects about Bruce Goff and identity. And that led to some other conversations. And as a gay man sort of coming back to Tulsa, there was this resonance with Goff's life of not feeling welcome, not feeling fully celebrated in a space. And so I felt very fortunate to come back and be celebrated. But also I wanted to explore these other stories. And so that led to folks like Ada Robinson. Some of you are theater people, so you might know William Inge, who wrote Splendor in the Grass, is from Independence, Kansas, just north of here. And then, of course, Lynn Riggs, who is the gay Cherokee playwright who wrote Green Grow the Lilacs, on which Oklahoma the musical is based. And so most Americans know Oklahoma. And at the time, Rodgers and Hammerstein, it was their first collaboration. And it was this big jingoistic, like, America's amazing. But the darker subtext, if you read the original, is very much about the strife and the sort of fraughtness of people not feeling like they could stay on the land and being disconnected from the land. And within Riggs's work, and we've done some readings of the original text at Spotlight Theater, sort of trying to bring all the stories together, we started to understand the sort of queer coding that was happening, similar to Tennessee Williams, and the sort of native coding that was happening in Riggs's work. So I've been really fortunate to get to just have all these weird conversations. And if you've been to Claremore, which is where Lynn Riggs is from, and it is also where Pat Gordon is from, there's a museum of history. And I went to a show there, and it was work that had been donated by the family of Riggs that was part of his personal archives. And in it, there's this painting, this is a nude portrait, and it was from 1933, and it was from Riggs's boyfriend at the time. It was a self-portrait. Riggs's boyfriend was an artist, and it was, I think it was at the time that he was living out in Shelter Island. And I was sort of blown away that I was in, you know, small town Claremore, Oklahoma, looking at this like nude male portrait from the 1930s, right? And so those were not the narratives that I felt like I was given in Tulsa growing up. And Steve Robinson, who is a friend of Pat's, said, oh, you know, it's not dissimilar to the Men in Ball Gowns portraits that Pat did. And I was like, what? And he said, yes, Pat Gordon has these portraits of men in drag. And I said, I have no idea. Like, of course, I knew Pat Gordon. I grew up in Tulsa. How can you not know Pat Gordon's work? But I didn't know those paintings. And so I reached out to Pat, and he very graciously invited me into his home. And we sat not dissimilar to this sort of setup here in front of a painting, and as Pat painted, and we had tea, we talked about the origin of those paintings. when, after doing Goth Fest for a couple of years, we sort of had this idea, had seen, if anybody knows the Museum of Jurassic Technology in LA, or the Museum of, I always forget the name of it, the Chicago Museum, not the Art Institute, but the Contemporary, MCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, did a show about, it was like a parafiction show. And it's like, what's parafiction? It's this like idea of taking fact and fiction and combining them to create alternative realities or alternative futures, or imbuing knowledge or imbuing fact onto things that you don't actually know about. I have these portraits from the early 90s that I acquired at thrift stores and weird art auctions in New York, and they are portraits of famous women. So Elizabeth Taylor, Priscilla Presley, and I know, who else do I have? I have Lisa Gibbons, who we thought was Vanna White for a very long time, but it's actually Lisa Gibbons, which JD figured out when I first met JD. He was like, that's not Vanna White, that's Lisa Gibbons. Lisa Gibbons has corroborated that it is her, and she, Vanna White, and Debbie Gibson, who are all friends, oftentimes get the mismatch. And at the bottom of them, it says, donated for the AIDS virus, Sally Kay. And we don't know who Sally Kay is. I've done lots of research. I've asked the internet. No one seems to know. But this idea of like wondering what Sally Kay's life was like and why Sally Kay painted these paintings, you know, and why they were contributing to the sort of larger narrative of queer history was really interesting to me. And so Pat very generously donated or loaned, sorry, two of this Men in Ball Gowns portraits, some of his most beloveds that were in his home. And so we had those on the wall with the Sally Kays we don't know anything about, with work by Marx, who's doing a lot of work around two-spirit identity and video portraiture, with objects and artifacts from Bruce Goff's world, artifacts from Lynn Riggs's world, because the Claremore Museum of History very generously donated them. And so it was so wonderful for me to have in conversation all of these different pieces, some of which we knew, some of the histories have been obfuscated, some of them we're still, you know, figuring out and reclaiming. And so it was a really beautiful moment. And so I appreciate you all being here to sort of have that conversation with me, because I think we all have so many different entry points to Pat's work. And we thought we would just sort of have like a weird ambling conversation, mostly focused on those paintings in the back room. So if you get a chance afterwards, I would love for everyone to take a look. So sorry for that weird long introduction. Rather than reading like a scripted, this is Pat Gordon and the history of his work, which I'm sure happened at the first conversation with Susan. So welcome, Pat, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.
I guess first I want to say congrats, and then also, how are you feeling right now? This is going to be the weirdest conversation in an art gallery you'll probably ever have. How are you feeling, Pat, about the show and about work right now?
Obviously, when I walk in here, I'm just like, whoa, which has surprised me, but it did. It just knocked me back. To see all of this work and to see the change from back in 1960 to today. I mean, and I don't think very often about my age or my how long I've been working, because it's all I do and it's what I was intended to do. I didn't ever have another option. I can't add. And I can barely keep track of my address book, but I can manage to knock out 10 hours in a day and be very happy with my day. Now, the rest of my life might be going to hell in a handbasket, but that's okay. I'll pick it up. It'll get picked up.
Before in the gallery, Marx was saying that they had learned a very important adage that the path to freedom is narrow. And Pat was saying, what was the phrase you used? The narrowest. And then, Pat said he's the narrowest person that he knows.
I'm pretty narrow.
And then had a lovely quip about the Yellow Brick Road being, and he felt like Dorothy just wandering down or very gleefully moving down the path.
As long as it's just headed towards a canvas or a piece of paper.
As long as it leads to the art
and
making.
If it's something else, I'm not very interested. It's pretty narrow. I'm not very interested. But if you want to look at painting or talk about painting or just my life picks up, I'm here. What do you want?
So, Pat, let's talk about paintings.
Okay.
And let's talk about the portraits in the room over there. When was the first time that you thought to do a painting of a person in drag or with a wig or with some sort of gender variance? Because most of the portraiture you had done up to that point was...
I did a lot of bank presidents and a lot of people who had a whole lot of money. And I followed them all and... they needed portraits. Mm-hmm. I'm the record producer, is basically what I'm doing, is producing a record of somebody at this time in their life. And as I say to them, I want you to look like it's the best day of your life without a care, a worry, or a problem. Because this is my view of you. This is not a photograph, even though I work from photographs. It's not a photograph. It's a reference. And getting to the point of the figure, I have a very specific look, and I have a very specific desire to make this painting work. And I've got to make them happy, too. So it's a trick, trying to get yourself lined up to where you're happy with what you make and being accepted by your client. And I'll tell you, honestly, if you came to me and said, I want to talk to you about a still life, I'd say, great. Now, let me explain how this works. I make it, and you come back when it's finished, because it's the only way I know how to work. I have to be pretty free to get down that narrow path by myself. My dogs, normally, if I was sitting here painting, they'd be asleep under my chair right here. So
this isn't that dissimilar to, yeah.
No, Pat's, this is Pat's my home. Studio.
It's literally his studio.
This is the rug from my studio. That's my drafting table. This is my real easel. I have a pretend easel at home at the moment.
A placeholder.
It doesn't work like this, and I'm working on a painting not as big as this. This is pretty good size.
So let's talk about the drag paintings. Okay. When was the first one?
Let's go back to that period. It's 1980. These were done about 30 years ago. What was going on 30 years ago? You don't remember because you weren't here. You were lucky. But people were dropping dead like rabbits. It was unbelievable. And we didn't know why, and we didn't understand why. And we, in Oklahoma, you think we're kind of like shaved off into the middle of nowhere. But, you know, it was going on here too. And we were having fundraisers because nobody else was taking it very seriously. And I don't know, Catholic Charities called me and we got started on an AIDS house. And we had a fundraiser and I went to the fundraiser. And as I was walking in, this man appears next to me and says, hello, Pat. I had no idea who it was. He had on a leather harness, a black satin skirt with real heavy boots, and he had a mask on his face, and on top of his head he had a 3-foot-tall ostrich plume Vegas showgirl headdress on. And I just thought, damn, isn't that interesting? So I kept staring at him all through the evening, and he was there with a friend of his who was completely shaved head, and he was wearing a tiara with pearls and these extraordinary gowns that Benjamin made. They made all of these outfits. It's brilliance. And the three of them kept standing together, and I just kept staring at them, and I didn't know who they were. I mean, I knew who they were, but I did not know them, really. And so I finally walked up and said, okay, I have to photograph you all. I see something here, and you're exquisite, and you're stunning, and you are coming from a place that somehow it's reaching deeply into me and needed to be, and I said, you need to be painted. So that's really how the series got started.
Mm-hmm. And you say Benjamin. Benjamin is the dressmaker.
Benjamin is the dressmaker.
Who's represented in the gold gowns here. And it was a local dressmaker.
No. He wasn't a local dressmaker. He worked in construction.
Oh. Really?
This man who's, you know, 3% body fat, he worked in construction and went home at night and sewed this gown. And I said to him, you're in the wrong business, boy. You should be designing clothes, making clothes for women. But he was in construction.
I didn't realize that. Uh-huh. And then Ken would have been the other one, the tiara.
Ken Youngblood.
And Ken is the famous Peaches Lennox, uh-huh. Which is his drag name. And if anybody's familiar with Hedwig and the Angry Inch, or I'm trying to think of other like sort of anti-drag, sort of like the rock and roll kind of punk drag queen. Ken was that person.
He was.
In Peaches Lennox. And then who was the third person?
Give me a second. I'm old.
And Ken and Benjamin, while you think about it, actually came to the opening here for Pat, so they were able to stand in front of the portraits and...
I thought they'd show up in drag, but they didn't.
I mean, they were pretty sparkly.
It could have, and if John hadn't been sick, they might have. But they came colorfully dressed, nonetheless. I found it fascinating when I saw them, because really, I couldn't tell who they were. I was so fascinated by that. I knew it. I knew I knew them, but I didn't know them like this.
And so did you take portraits or pictures of them that night, or did you ask them to come in later?
I had them come back in a couple of weeks later. Mm-hmm. And Benjamin, at that point, I was just going to do Mrs. Lennox. Mm-hmm. Now, I call her Mrs. Lennox because I think the original portrait of Ken, it's Ken in his black gown, and he's standing by a window, and there's a French divan behind him and a cat looking at him. And again, he has no hair and a tiara out of pearls, which I loved. It was a 6 by 4 foot painting, so life size. And primarily, I was just going to photograph Ken. And then I said, well, what's this gold dress over here? Mm-hmm. And Ben looked up and he said, well, that's mine. And I said, you're what? And that's when I found out he had made the dress, he was making clothes. And I said, well, we have plenty of time. We'll shoot you too. Why not? Well, they were just exquisite photographs. I mean, I just went, my God. And so I went about painting this series, which a lot of people didn't know how to take. Especially after you sit around and you make beautiful paintings about beauty and objects and atmosphere. And all of a sudden, here were these very almost 19th century portraits of men in ball gowns. And I didn't want to call them men in drag. This was more than that. This was a step past that. They were significant beauty of a different kind in a world that didn't see them. And I thought that was really tragic. It was short-sighted of the other side, very short-sighted. But I wanted them to be seen and to be recognized, because they were, as it says in that room, and I'm so glad it does, they were so unapologetic about it. They felt wonderful. They felt who they were. They were happy men. And I wanted to paint about that.
How many are there?
There were 9 in total. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm making a little one, which is interesting because somebody said, well, did you ever do drag? I said, well, you know, I was this close to a skirt, but I really never had a desire to. And so, no, the answer was no. And in this new painting, I'm in a ball gown. It's only this time I'm Barbie size. I'm not doing any more big paintings. I'm doing little paintings, Barbie doll. My grandson walked in, looked at it, and just went, and he just stared at me. I said, it's a painting. It's not reality, but it's a painting. So every now and then it's good to shock somebody, especially your kids.
When you first finished a series of them, the 9, mm-hmm. what was the showing like? Because I know that they were shown, was it Living Arts or?
Living Arts showed them 10 years after they were done.
Okay.
My dealers in New York just looked at me and said, do not show us these paintings. We will not have anything to do with them. Mm-hmm. Really? Well, that seems stupid. And they never did. There was a show being done in San Francisco that I was invited to participate in. And he said, would you send me your work that you're going to send? I said, yeah. The show was called Men by Men. And this was a significant show in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And when I sent them the images of the men in ball gowns, the dealer called me back and he said, well, I can't show these. Mm-hmm. And I said, you live in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. When I can't help it. Mm-hmm. I can't show these.
Was his response, thinking about San Francisco, the men by men, I'm assuming it was mostly like queer artists or gay men making portraits of beautiful men?
No, it wasn't about, it was about artists who painted men. Mm.
But so the queerness or the drag was the thing that made them uncomfortable. Yeah. The transgressive act, right?
So they wouldn't show them.
Because I think about the history of like Janusz Zurychis, and we think about the Bruce Sargents, and there are and have been beautiful portraiture of men and male bodies and masculine forms for so long, right? And this still like steps outside of even that by showing a hint of femininity despite the masculinity present in like the form. And I think that's amazing that at the time here in Tulsa you were confronting some of the queer community and the gay community specifically's own internalized homophobia as well. Because I wonder like if they would have even worked in like New York City at like the gayest gallery in the city, they probably would have been uncomfortable with those as well because they didn't fit.
At the time.
Mm-hmm.
At the time.
And you just wanted to show the beauty. Mm. Yeah.
It was 15 years ago that Steve Liggett came to me and said, I really want to show all of them. Mm. I said, sure, why not? We never have.
Mm-hmm. And those are the pictures that we've seen with, it was like a black wall, it's sort of like large, basically just like a large wall of them. Is that right? Okay.
Yes, it was.
And then have they sold? Is it?
Some of them have sold, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm down to three.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, they were all straight clients who bought them. Mm-hmm. One hangs over, the one of the dressmaker and Mrs. Lennox hangs over a grand piano in their kitchen. Now, it's just so wonderful there, I can't tell you.
Mm, I bet. I'm gonna have to see that kitchen at some point.
Yeah, it's a big round room, and there's a grand piano at one side of it next to the stove.
Yeah, maybe the next show is photos of them in their space of where they ended up. Yeah, that would be a great little diasporic show. So then Ken and Ben, and then did the third person make it into some as well?
I only did one portrait of him.
Okay. And the double portraits. So the double portraits, Ken and Ben came back for the show, and did they know how they were being received in the community? Like, was it celebrated like within the gay community here? Like, was that?
Well, I think once the pieces were shown, mm-hmm. and 20 years had moved on, mm-hmm. people were less offended. They were less mm-hmm. thrown by them. And they didn't quite get why I would do it, you mm-hmm. know? Well, this is my life, mm-hmm. part of my life, just a single small part of my life being gay. It's just, you know, it's like I like Diet Coke. That's all it is. I like Diet Coke.
I mean, it's interesting that, you know, they weren't intended to be political statements.
No.
And the unintended, it was an unintended consequence.
Democrat. Right. There's no question of that.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't make them to confront. You made them. You made objects of beauty.
They were objects mm-hmm. of beauty.
Because I think about this, right?
Yes.
In terms of political statements.
Well, this was a political statement. This was about Ukraine. Mm-hmm. This is my interpretation of what was going on.
Are there other works that you've made similar to this that you feel were intentionally political?
Yes.
Can you tell us about one?
I think really the more interesting part is that it taught a lot of people to be less judgmental when the show was up. It was only up for a month. That was the shame. It should have been up for 3 months like this. Politics are a weird thing. I have two major paintings of Donald Trump that were started long before he really got on a roll, but I knew I needed to paint about this too. My painting's called Emperor Tiny Hands Draining the Swamp. And I painted it during COVID. But in the painting, Trump's walking through the swamp and there are black snakes swimming around him, all of those being senators. And they're going towards the White House, and the White House is on fire. And in the background of the White House is the Capitol, and it's on fire. And this was made 5-7 years ago now.
I want to see this. Where is it? Is it?
It's 8 feet tall and 4 feet wide. There are going to be posters available soon.
I will be buying one of those posters.
Because in the bottom of the poster we've made, it says, "No Kings in America." Yeah. And the funny part is, I made this painting 6 years ago. I like to tell my dogs, "Your dad's a psychic." I said, "Pay attention. I know when dinner's coming." But I feel the need to make them. Right. What is going to happen to those paintings? Who the hell knows? I have a certain amount of... I think we have to pay attention to what's going on in the world right now. And I'm sorry. I think artists see it so much further in advance. I'm telling you, I knew this 6 years ago, that this was all going to happen. But I didn't, you know, I'm not going to call somebody and say, "Hey, I have to paint it and figure it out."
This episode of Museum Confidential is sponsored by retrospectives. Of course, the word refers to literally looking back over the past, retrospective. And if you're going to look back over the past, you must have a body of work to look back over, right? Anyone these days, it seems, can have a show or an exhibition, but a retrospective is something special. It says you've put in the work, you've done the time, you have paid that sweat equity. You might hear someone say, "Hey, I'm going to go check out a so-and-so show downtown. You want to check it out?" Maybe, maybe not, we'll see. But if they say, "Hey, so-and-so has a career retrospective at the museum, should we go?" In that case, abso-freaking-lutely.
Well, that's our show for this week. Museum Confidential is produced and edited by Scott Gregory in the studios of Public Radio Tulsa. To learn more about the station or the museum, visit publicradiotulsa.org or philbrook.org or both. As always, we suggest both. Until next time, look closer.